Because here's what we're doing today. We are continuing a series that we started last week where we're really asking this question that is at the core at Christianity. And here it is. If Jesus changed everything then. Now, when we say Jesus changed everything then, we're referring to a couple thousand years ago when Jesus predicted his death and resurrection, and that's exactly what happened then. So if Jesus changed everything then, what does that change for me now? In other words, what difference does an empty tomb make in my life today? What difference does an empty tomb make when I'm seeking freedom from my past mistakes and regrets? What difference does it make when I'm seeking peace in the midst of suffering? And what difference does it make when I'm seeking life, when inevitably, one of these days, I will face death? Jesus changed everything then. What difference does that make for me now? What does that change for me now? That's the conversation that we're going to continue to have over the next few weeks. And I hope you'll come back for that. But today, the question that we want to ask is this. If Jesus changed everything then, what does that change for me now when I feel purposeless? I wonder if you've ever felt this. I wonder if maybe you are feeling this now in life, purposeless. It's just kind of that sense of, I don't know, I'm just kind of drifting through life. I don't really feel like I have that direction or that purpose in life. I was talking with a man a couple weeks ago, worked for a company for about 20 years. I mean, he's very faithful to this company. He was really good at his job. Until one day somebody walks into his office and says, thank you, but we no longer need your position. As we were talking, it was obvious to me that we were no longer having a conversation about, like, what will I do without this job? But it was more like, who will I be without this job? And we do that sometimes, right? We attach our purpose to our work. You know, we meet one another, and what's one of the first questions that we ask? Well, what do you do? You know, and it just, what we do and who we are just kind of comes together. And sometimes we do that. Or maybe you're a student, and you got it all planned out, right? Like, I'm going to get the grades, I'm going to get into the right school, and I'm going to get the degree. And I don't know, maybe things haven't turned out exactly the way that you thought they would. Or maybe things have turned out exactly the way that you thought that they would, and you get to the end of that, you get the grades, you get the school, you get the degree, and then you have this feeling of like, it's not as fulfilling as I thought it would be. Is there more? Is there something else? Or maybe you spent 20 plus years raising your kids, and they're ready to fly, and they're gone, and they're off, and they're doing their own thing, and it just seems like they're doing well, and they don't really need your help as much as they used to. I mean, it's what we taught them to do, right? It's what we wanted, but still, it's a little like, okay, what now? It's a question that we ask. It's a question that all of us ask. Whether you are a Jesus follower or not, you're going to ask this question. It is the question that we ask when things are good. It's the question we ask when things are bad, times of despair, times of success. We ask this question. We're not even really sure that there is an answer to this question, but we ask it anyway, and here it is. What is the purpose of life? What is the purpose of life? It's almost like if we could just get an answer to this question, we have a sense that we could make sense of the rest of life. Like if I just knew why I was here, if I knew what I was living for, then I would have that sense of purpose. And I don't know, maybe that's you, maybe that's where you are, but if you've ever felt that way or you feel that way, that purposelessness, then you need to know that you know exactly what those first followers felt like. We talked last week a little bit about how they lost their hope when they lost Jesus. But today what I want us to see is that they lost their purpose as well. For years they had followed Jesus. I mean, everywhere that he went, they went. They were walking with him, talking with him. They were eating together. Everywhere that they went, they watched Jesus heal people right before their very eyes. They watched him teach people, and he watched the lights come on for people and changing their lives. They had spent these days with Jesus, and they were like the rebels of their day. I mean, sometimes they would end up running from the authorities, like literally. It's like, okay, let's make sure we've got know where the back door's at, because, you know, this might get rough and we need to find our way out. That's what it was like for them. And I think they kind of liked it. They were the rebels of their day. Listen, while other people were trying to create and change the world through violence and oppression, and there was a lot of that in the first century, they were changing the world through love. And they were loving life. And until the moment that their best friend is taken by force, wrongfully accused, and he is beaten, and he is killed. He is crucified on a cross. And the sky goes dark in the middle of the day. And it's not because of a solar eclipse. The sky goes dark, but more than that, their world went dark. Why? Because a crucified Messiah was not a part of their plan. Now, they had a lot of plans, but that was not part of it. Their plan was for a Messiah to become king, so that he would have the political might, the political power and the military might, that he could lead them, that they could finally have the respect that they deserved. That was their plan. And they just knew that Jesus was going to lead them directly to that until he didn't. You see, they lost more than just their future hope. They lost their present purpose. The writer of Proverbs says this: many are the plans in a person's heart, but it is the Lord's purpose that prevails. Yes, even those who were closest to Jesus, even those who walked with him, talked with him, they were so close to him, they still let their plans overshadow God's purposes. If you have your Bibles, turn to Mark chapter 10. We'll also have the scripture up here on the screen. But in Mark chapter 10, this is less than 24 hours before Jesus is to be crucified. So at this point in the narrative, we're really close to that moment. And Jesus knows that moment is coming. Now, the disciples, they haven't quite figured it out. Even though Jesus has told them not once, not twice, but now in Mark chapter 10, he is telling his disciples for the third time that he is to be arrested, mocked, spit upon. I mean, he's very detailed here, that he is to be beaten and to be crucified, and that on the third day, he would rise again. This is the third time that he has predicted his death and resurrection to his disciples. Now, I wonder if you had been in the room that day and Jesus is saying this for the third time, I wonder how you would react to him. Well, I can tell you how the earliest disciples, or at least two of them, reacted. James and John, this is what they said. Then James and John, the sons of Zebedee, came over and spoke to him. "Teacher," they said, "we want you to do us a favor." "What is your request?" he asked. They replied, "When you sit on your glorious throne," they had their plans in mind. Remember their plans. "We want to sit in places of honor next to you, one on your right and the other on your left." Now, let me get this straight. Jesus just told them, "Friends, I am going to be crucified and rise again." And James and John go, "Okay, Jesus, that sounds good. So, could you do us a favor?" And unfortunately, 2,000 years later, not much has changed. Because you and I, we have our plans. We want the power, we want the positions, we want the possessions, we want the prestige, we want the prominence. We are pretty content people until, of course, we compare and see someone else like us who has more than us, and all of a sudden what we have doesn't seem like enough. And we have plans because we want to pursue these things. They were arguing back and forth about, you know, who was going to have this position and who was going to have that. What ends up happening is that our plans end up becoming all about us. And now here's the thing when it comes to purpose. A self-serving purpose, a self-centered purpose, it is going to leave you empty. I promise you. It's going to leave you empty. It's going to leave you unfulfilled. Oh, well, it might fulfill you for a little while, but in the long run, it will be unsatisfying to you. I love how Rick Warren puts this when it comes to purpose. He says, you cannot arrive at your life's purpose by starting with a focus on yourself. You must begin with God, your creator. You exist only because God wills that you exist. You were made by God and for God. And until you understand that, life will never make sense. It is only in God that we discover our origin, our identity, our meaning, our purpose, our significance, and our destiny. Every other path leads to a dead end. I think that's spot on. I think Jesus did too, because Jesus saw that his followers, their plans were going to take them to a dead end. They're arguing about who's going to be seated on the left and who's going to be seated on the right and can we have this position or that position? And Jesus hears all this happening. He knows the conversation. And by the way, Scripture tells us that some of the other disciples found out what James and John were asking Jesus. Do you think that sat very, very well with them? No, they did not like that at all. Jesus hears all this. Here's how he responds. But among you, it will be different. It will be different. Whoever wants to be a leader or greatest among you must be your servant. And whoever wants to be first among you must be the slave of everyone else. For even the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve others and to give his life as a ransom for many. This is less than 24 hours before he's to be crucified. It's going right over their head. He's told them three times. But they don't get it. They're still arguing about who's going to have this and who's going to have that. And Jesus realizes that there's not time for another sermon. The time for sermons, it's up. The time for talking is over. So instead of talking, instead of speaking about their purpose, Jesus is about to show them their purpose. This is in John chapter 13 when he reveals this. It was just before the Passover festival. So again, this is the night before Jesus is to be crucified. And he knows it. Jesus knew. Jesus knew that the hour had come for him to leave this world and go to the Father. Having loved his own who were in the world, he loved them to the very end. The evening meal was in progress, and the devil had already prompted Judas, the son of Simon Iscariot, to betray Jesus. And Jesus knew that the Father had put all things under his power. Now that's just kind of crazy. He knew that the Father had put all things under his power, and that he had come from God, and that he was returning to God. So knowing all that, what did Jesus do? He got up from the meal, took off his outer clothing, and wrapped a towel around his waist. And after that, he poured water into a basin and began to wash his disciples' feet, drying them with the towel that was wrapped around him. Now, culturally speaking, no one saw this coming. You kind of have to understand a little bit about foot washing. First of all, the master would never wash the disciples' feet. They would not even wash each other's feet. Now, maybe a disciple would wash the master's feet, but that's the way that it went. So you have to understand what Jesus does in this moment makes everyone very uncomfortable. They don't like it. Now, of course, Peter's the only one that opens his mouth and lets us know he doesn't like it. But they were uncomfortable. What is Jesus doing here? Jesus is showing them their purpose in life. And what is that purpose? First and foremost, It is to be served by Jesus. Now, does that make you feel a little uncomfortable? It made them feel uncomfortable. It makes me feel uncomfortable to think about our purpose being allowing Jesus to serve us. You see, Peter, he was going to have none of it. Now, give him a sword, give him a task, give him something to do, let him serve. He was all about that. But just to sit and to place, and you got, in this culture, oh, their feet were so nasty, right? Like, I mean, the roads that they walked through, like human sewage, like, it's bad. The animals, it's bad. To place those dirty, nasty feet in the hands of Jesus, this made Peter very uncomfortable. It made him squirm. And the truth is, it does us too, still to this day. It makes us uncomfortable to just sit and let Jesus serve us, love us, wash us. We like the idea of serving Jesus. I think one of the reasons is because it kind of gives us that idea and that feeling that Jesus needs us. By the way, Jesus does not need us. He does not need our help. He wants our hearts. That's what he's trying to teach his disciples. That before we serve others, we're served by Jesus. My question is, will you let him serve you? How long has it been since you've let him love you? How long has it been since you have placed your dirty, nasty feet in his hands and just let him wash you? Because that's what Jesus is saying. You have to let me serve you so that then and only then you are going to be ready to serve others. He goes on to say this. He says, you call me teacher and Lord, and rightly so, for that is what I am. And now that I, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also should wash one another's feet. I have set you an example that you should do as I have done for you. Very truly, I tell you, no servant is greater than his master, nor is a messenger greater than the one who sent him. Now that you know these things, you will be blessed if you do them. I want you to see that Jesus is not just giving his followers another to-do list. This isn't about him giving them new things to do. This is about giving them a new way to live. This is about giving them a new way to be. To let Jesus serve them so that then they could serve others. And I know this is so countercultural. I mean, what's the message that we have today? That the purpose of life is to be happy. And what does our culture and society tell us about being happy? It tells us that if you want to be happy, then you need others to serve you. And Jesus says, no, the exact opposite is true. That happiness and fulfillment and purpose is not found in being served, it is found in being the servant. And I know that's countercultural. It defies human nature. Everything in us wants to be served. But Jesus is showing them and showing us a new way to live and a place to find purpose. Now you may be wondering, okay, but do I have a purpose? I mean, does God really have a purpose for me? You know, maybe you're worshiping with us online today. You'd love to be here, but for health reasons, physical reasons, you weren't even able to get out of the hospital bed today. You're watching from a hospital. Maybe you're watching from your house. You couldn't even get out of bed, and you wonder, what is my purpose? Or maybe for mental reasons. You struggle to get anything. What is my purpose? Or maybe you're in that place where you just feel like every time someone looks at you, all they see are your mistakes. And whether that's true or not, it sure does feel that way. And you can't help but think, what would my purpose be? There's a little bit of a test. If you've ever wondered if you have a purpose, I'm going to give you just a little bit of a test that you can do like right now in the moment. You can do this when you go home later all week long. Anytime you have that question, does God have a purpose for me? Here's what I want you to do, okay? I want you to take a couple fingers. I want you to place it on your wrist over the radial artery, which is on the thumb side of your wrist. Go ahead, do it. You feel that? That's a pulse. If you do not feel that, you need to go see your doctor. But if you have a pulse, then you have a purpose. God is the giver and the taker of life. And for whatever reason, he has chosen us to put breath in our lungs this morning, to give us the ability to work, to give us the ability to minister to others. If you have a pulse, then you have a purpose. You know, I think about a lot of folks in our church and living out your purpose and living out this serving others, this foot washing, so to speak. It plays out in a lot of different ways. It looks differently because all of us have been given different gifts and we've been given different opportunities. So it looks a little bit different. But I can't help but think about my friend Elmer. I'm going to be preaching his celebration of life in just a couple days. Now, in the last 10 years, ever since I've known Elmer, he was confined to a wheelchair. But every time I would see him, he would sit right back there in the back, in that little section right there. And every time that I saw him, he had this big, beautiful smile on his face. Now, I've thought before, if anyone had a reason to say, why God me, it would have been Elmer. I was talking with his wife this past week and she said he never asked that. That smile that you see, yep, that's him. And every time I would see Elmer, I would think, if he's got a reason to smile, then so do I. It was serving me, inspiring me, encouraging me, teaching me. Sometimes serving looks like an act of service. Sometimes it's an act of kindness, and sometimes it's just the power of a smile. Point being, you've got a pulse and you've got a purpose. Remember the words of Jesus. Now that you know these things, you will be blessed if you what? If you what? You will be blessed if you do them.